Most nights, we're going to play through Paul Millsap.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. And today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast is also brought to you by Draft.com. Use the promo code LOFANTASY to get yourself a free entry into a draft with your first deposit. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. We've got 10 games from Tuesday to break down. We've got 5 games from Wednesday to preview. We've got a pretty big trade to talk about as well, and some idiocy to discuss. So,
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. Where will we start? I think we will start with the trade that went down today. The Phoenix Suns sending Eric Bledsoe to the Milwaukee Bucks in exchange for Greggy Monroe and a protected first round draft choice. I won't get into all the protections on that first round pick, but it is protected for the next 3 seasons and then becomes unprotected in 2021. And to me, that's the big asset that Phoenix wanted back. Greg Monroe comes back on an expiring deal. We'll talk about that Phoenix side of things first. I don't really see much changing here for Phoenix. The Suns are either going to try and move Monroe on to another team with a trade, or they're going to buy him out. They are not interested in Greg Monroe. It's more a salary matching thing. They wanted that first round draft choice for Bledsoe. Not that it's going to be an overly high one, but they wanted to get something back. Monroe is an expiring deal. And I don't think they're going to be coming in and saying, right, Greg Monroe is going to be inserted as our starting center and he's going to come in here and play 26 minutes a night. I just don't think that's the case. We've already seen them using 5 front court players per game at the moment with Tyson Chandler, Alex Len, and that power forward morass of Jared Dudley, Dragan Bender, and Marquise Chris, and Monroe comes into that. That's a 6th guy there, and I don't think they're automatically going to, and you could say, well, Monroe is better than Tyson Chandler, Monroe is better than Alex Len, and yes, I agree with all of that. I think Monroe is a very good player, and I said this plenty of times. I think Monroe was by far at least double or 3 times as good as any other center on the Bucks roster last season. I said it at the time last year. I'll continually say it now. He is very good. He was the best defensive big they had. That's how poor their defensive centers were, but he was adequate defensively, and he can do a lot of things offensively. I think Jason Kidd was horrendous in many things that he does, but in the way that he handled Greg Monroe. But that doesn't mean that Phoenix is going to think the same way as me. And you say, oh, well, he's better than Tyson Chandler. That's fine. But there's also much more sense in Phoenix playing Alex Len over Tyson Chandler for the last 3 seasons. And that hasn't happened. We're seeing it now this year that Len is playing well, but Tyson Chandler is still getting the starts, still getting the crunch time minutes, and it makes no sense. And a guy like Len is an unrestricted free agent next season, as is Greg Monroe. So they've got no incentive to develop Monroe. He's not old, but he's not young. He's not a part of their future, and he's not going to be on this team long term. So people are saying, go grab Greg Monroe. And yes, Greg Monroe in 26 minutes is a top 100 type of player. I don't see that happening. I don't see them saying to either Len or Chandler, we're not going to play you anymore, because they shouldn't have been playing Chandler for the last 3 years, or last 2 years at least, and that hasn't been the case. I don't think getting an asset that they have no interest in whatsoever in Monroe is going to make them change their tune on Tyson Chandler. Now, it doesn't do much for the power forwards, because Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris hadn't really been playing at center much under Jay Triano. He made a point of saying that he doesn't want to go to those small ball lineups with those guys at center. So it is going to impact Chandler, and it's going to impact Len. More, the biggest impact Monroe will have is impacting what Len can do and Chandler. So it probably takes Len out of 12-team discussion for the short term. But as I said, I don't see Monroe. I think there's a bigger chance of him never playing a single minute for the Suns than playing over 25 minutes per night. And I think he should play 20. I think he's a very, very good center and significantly underrated. But that doesn't mean that's what the Suns feel, and they clearly don't. They're not interested in having him here as a part of this team. So I don't think there's much urgency in grabbing Greggy. Now, if you want to take a flyer on a 14-teamer, if you're in a 12-team league and you just go, well, hey, let's just see what happens, that's fine. I totally understand that. If you want to if you want to drop a guy like Marquise Chris, or as Matt Smith likes to call him, Marquise Morris, you can drop him. And the reason Matt calls him that is not because he doesn't know his name, but because of his petulant, bitchy attitude is very similar to those Morai twins that used to be in Phoenix. You got Marquise, you got Marcus, and then you got Marquise as the 3 Morris brothers. So if you want to drop Marquise Chris and add Monroe to see what happens, fine. I think the percentage chance of Monroe getting those minutes is pretty low in Phoenix. I just don't see that as being the case. So Chris's minutes are low. I don't think the arrival of Munro has any impact on that whatsoever. I don't think that'll be an issue. What also happens now in Phoenix is we don't have another point guard coming back. So we've got Mike James and Tyler Ulis. I don't think it changes much with these guys. They're going to be consistently inconsistent. They're going to be variations in their minutes from night to night. You'll get 27 from Mick James one night. You'll get 21 from Ulis. And then it'll switch around the next game. And then you'll have 27 from James and he shoots 2 of 15. And then the next game he'll play 20 minutes and he'll shoot 5 of 7. It's really, really hard to get a handle on them. Both of them could be useful in 12-team leagues. But neither of them, I don't think, if you add them, they're not going to be in your best 11 players. Probably not in your best 12 players. They'll probably be the worst guy on your roster. And in most cases in a standard league, that spot's just better off being used to stream. Because not one of them, I don't think, is going to assert themselves. At some point, the Suns do have to clear a roster spot to actually keep James on the roster as well, because he's a two-way guy that can play for those 45 days before he needs to be converted. And they will definitely convert him at this point. But they need to find that roster spot, whether that's buying out Greggy Munro or doing some sort of two-for-one trade to open up that roster spot. That's something they will be looking at doing. But I don't think it makes James or it makes Ulis these absolute stone-cold, must-own type of players. On the Milwaukee side, it's a lot more interesting. Obviously, Bledsoe comes across there with a significant pedigree, especially in fantasy basketball, of being a top 20 type player. Malcolm Brogdon, Brogo, has been their starting point guard, and he's been bloody, bloody good. And he is a very, very good player. And I was going to say you could make the argument that maybe he's actually a better player than Eric Bledsoe at this point. That's probably a hard argument to make, but he's really, really good. And he fits exactly what they need to do. The choices that the Bucks have, and we don't know exactly how they're going to go here. Do they move Tone Snell to the bench and put Bledsoe and Brogdon as the starting backcourt? Remember, Brogdon was a shooting guard in college, and he played off-ball quite a bit, and you know, off-ball alongside Giannis and alongside Dele last season too. So they can move Tone Snell to the bench to do that. They can move Brogdon to the bench and insert Bledsoe as the starting point guard alongside Tone Snell. That's an option. Or they could keep Bledsoe in a sixth-man role and have Brogdon as the starting point guard still. In the end, I don't think it's going to matter too much. I think that Bledsoe gets the bulk of the minutes. I think you'll lose 1 or 2 minutes off Brogo. I think you'll lose 1 or 2 minutes off Tone Snell. And the guy that's going to suffer the biggest, biggest drop is going to be DeAndre Liggins, if anyone gives a shit about that, or Matthew Dellavedova, who's going to go from 21, 22 minutes a night down to probably 12, 13, that sort of a range in terms of playing time. So he is going to be the biggest loser. So you're going to have Bledsoe come in and take the majority of his minutes. What you're also going to do is you're going to see the Bucks play smaller. So I reckon you'll see more minutes for Yanni at center as we push Chrissy Middleton to the four and we run Bledsoe, Brogdon, Snell, Middleton, Giannis lineups more, limiting Thon McCur and Johnny Henson's minutes. Now, it's not going to be limiting them massively. Maybe they do that 3 or 4 minutes a night, but that is another way that they'll get Bledsoe those minutes because you need to get Bledsoe, Brogdon, Snell, Middleton, and Adetokounmpo. They need to be your top five players in terms of minutes. And then you have Henson coming in after that with Teletovic and McCurr as the next two guys after that. That's the way they should be approaching this. That's the way I believe they will be approaching it. So Bledsoe is not going to have the same value we had in Phoenix. I don't think he'll be a top 20 guy. Yeah, sneak inside the top 50. You might get 10-20 spot drop for Brogo. Tone Snell wasn't a standard league guy anyway. Chrissy Middleton might drop 5 to 10 spots, more likely 10 spots. As everyone apart from Giannis, yeah, loses some of their ball handling. They lose some usage. They lose some assist numbers. So Brogdon loses some. Middleton loses some there. They lose some shot attempts as well. Nothing is going to change, I don't believe, for Adetokounmpo. Bledsoe is going to have to adjust, and he is going to drop in value. But for those owners who are holding on to him, obviously this is fantastic because he's playing. Now, it's not an ideal situation for him in terms of overall role, but it's great that he's actually there and playing. Now, as for Johnny Henson, he was a real turd today. I would still be holding him in pretty much any league that I added him. He had 5 fouls in, I think, 4 minutes or 4 fouls in 5 minutes, whichever one it was. He accumulated those fouls really, really quickly, so that limited his playing time. But even in that situation, McCurr played like 15 minutes. So it wasn't like Thon established himself and put up these big numbers. Henson's still going to play his 25 to 26 a night. You'll just have the overall pairing of those two, McCurr and Henson, probably not playing the full 48 as Yanni plays some minutes at center to get more of those wings onto the court. So that's how I see all that shaking in. I could be totally wrong on Munro. I think Munro is a good player, very good player, as I've said plenty of times. And I said this so many times last year, is when they dicked around and took Munro out of the lineup and put Henson in, they lost pretty much every game. Since Munro has been hurt this season, the Bucks are 1-4. Now, I'm not saying that's entirely to do with the fact that Munro has been out. But they're much worse without him. They are. Henson is a shit player. Now, I can say that he is a must-add player, but he is not a good NBA player. He is a piss-poor defender. He is not a good offensive player. He is a shot blocker, and even that has declined for him over the past couple of seasons. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out for John, because the team struggled this year with him in the starting lineup. They struggled last season when Munro was out of the rotation, and Munro is really, really good, and I'm not sure how that works. Now, in terms of if he does get bought out by the Suns and goes somewhere else, I just don't see a situation where he goes in and just waltzes into 26, 27 minutes a night. He's going to come in as a 22-minute guy, which is going to be more a 14-team league player or a streaming-type option for 12-teamers rather than coming in and automatically demanding this huge, huge role. Because if someone had wanted him in a huge, huge role, they would have traded something. Anything to get him, pretty much. Or they'll engage in that with the Suns to try and do it. And it's just been, he's been on the block for 2 years and no one's been interested in Munro. Even though I do think he is quite a bit underrated in NBA circles. So that is something to pay attention to with Munro and all these players. But Henson to me is probably the biggest winner. Yeah, Brogdon's a loser. Bledsoe loses a little bit, although it's a net gain from where he's currently standing. Alex Len loses a little bit as well, and the Mike James, Tyler Ulis situation is pretty much exactly the same as it was before today. Let's now take a second to talk about today's sponsor, and that is the good folks over at Draft. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try one of the newest daily fantasy apps, and that is Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but not like the other guys. On Draft, you play real live snake drafts with other people, just like in your season-long leagues. And here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night, just like your standard DFS, but it's not salary cap. You're not in a contest with 50,000 other people, and everyone can own the same guy. It's a snake draft. You grab Yanni, I grab Boogie. You grab LeBron, I grab Westbrook. And you can't have duplicate players. Once you're done drafting, that's it. There's no trades, there's no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you. There are drafts starting every couple of minutes, so you can join one right now. And the best part, you can play for cold, hard cash. Drafts start for just $1, so there's a draft for everyone. With no salary caps, you can play in this real-life snake draft, just like you play with your friends in your season-long leagues. Come and join me on Draft today. Download the app anytime. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes, or play right from your computer on draft.com. Whatever you want. For a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit. But you have to use my promo code, and that is LOFANTASY. That's right. Play a real money game for free just for using my promo code LOFANTASY on your first deposit on Draft. When you go in there, you'll also see the Locked On specific leagues when you use that promo code, and you can join in with other Locked On listeners across the NBA network and other hosts of the Locked On podcasts also. So go and check out Draft. Use that promo code LOFANTASY and get yourself into a free cash money game. You don't pay anything, but you've got the opportunity to win real prizes. So check out draft.com. All right, that's all there is to say about the trade at this point. I'm sure more stuff will come up as we hear more information. Just a quick shout out to the person who watched my video yesterday and had to immediately switch it off because they almost vomited in their mouth because I called Wayne Ellington the Duke. It was such an issue that he had to ask me, can you please stop calling Wayne Ellington the Duke? Because he was a massive, massive UNC fan, and to call a UNC player the Duke is tantamount to satanic, and I was called satanic for calling Ellington the Duke. So shout out to him, who will never watch again, vomited in his mouth and had to shut off immediately when I called Wayne Ellington the Duke. So shout out to you, mate, for being probably the most hysterical fan that I've ever encountered. And that's saying something after my Derrick Rose discussion yesterday. So shout out to you. Let's get on to the monstrous line of the night.
Pretty good. It's pretty, 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 pretty good.
Yeah, now he is. Nikola Jokic is pretty bloody brilliant. Any big man who goes up against the Nets is going to have an opportunity to just really wreak some havoc. And Jokic did just that. 41 and 12, 5 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 4 triples, 16 of 25 from the field, and 5 of 6 from the free throw line. That quote at the start of the game was from none other than resident dickhead Mike Malone, who said that most often we're going to go through Paul Millsap. And when that quote came out, I just shook my head and go, what's wrong with this guy? You've got literally the best offense in the NBA last season outside of the Warriors. But when Jokic was in there, I believe they were number one anyway when he was inserted as a starter. The best offense in the NBA. So Malone's solution to that is, well, we've got the best thing in the NBA. Let's just screw everything up and change it. We've got the most dynamic center in terms of passing, distributing, almost unbeatable offense. But you know what? Let's change everything. And then he goes out and Jokic takes 25 shots, which is exactly what he should be doing. Now, whether Malone was just talking out of his ass, or this was one of the nights when it's like most nights when they go through Paul Millsap, maybe this was the other night that wasn't the most night, but this is what you do every night. Jokic is this good. And as with last year, man, what's wrong with Jokic? What's wrong with Jokic? I'm panicking. He's the 10th ranked player this season. He's sixth over the last week. He's averaging 18 and 11.5, 4.5 assists. He's shooting 54 and 90 with a true shooting of 64%. His usage is at 22. It's marginally down on last season, but those numbers are still up. He's averaging an extra point per game, an extra 2 rebounds per game, only down 0.5 assists, but his steals are up. His blocks are fine. His percentages are fine. He's cruising. And you drafted him at pick 9 or pick 10. He's the 10th player at the moment. You're loving life. That's all there is. All I do is win, no matter what. Thanks, DJ Khaled. But yeah, look, that is a win. To get a guy in the first round who brings you back that same value, it's exactly what you want, and that's where Jokic is sitting. So again, a little bit of a rocky start, but he's flying. He's crushing it at the moment. And this even comes after he had that real stinker against the Warriors, where an 8-7 game. He's still ranked that highly. He is putting up numbers left, right, and center. And he's really, really good. And he's super fun to watch. We know that. But let's hope Malone doesn't actually revert to dickhead form and start to run everything through Paulie Millsap like he threatened to do. Let's hope that's not the case. The waiver wire line of the night. There were numerous players who were ranked higher than Isaiah Whitehead, but they all had ownership of like 53% and 60%. So when I look at the waiver wire line of the night, the cutoff I like to use is under 50% of ownership, and that's where Isaiah Whitehead was. He only scored 5 points, but it was the peripheral numbers that really stood out. He hit a three, he had 2 boards, but 4 assists, 4 steals, and 2 blocks for Isaiah Whitehead. What a weird stat line. 2 of 6 from the field. I think it was his first or his second appearance for the season, only his second game for the year. That sort of performance makes him the 22nd ranked player over the last week. He got those extra playing time with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Trevor Booker, and Jarrett Allen out. The Nets went super small. There is literally nothing to see here with Isaiah Whitehead, but he turned in a massive, massive defensive performance. Maybe in the next game, if Rondae and Allen and Booker remain out, he might get some more playing time, but literally nothing to see here. He is just not a rotation guy most of the time. But shout out to him if for some reason in a 30-team league you had him, you'd be pretty wrapped with that sort of output. But yeah, let's just chalk that one up to a weird sort of performance. The young gun of the night, Buddrick Hield. 21 points, 7 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals, 4 triples, a blistering 7 of 9 from the field, and 3 of 3 from the free throw line. I said that Isaiah Whitehead was the 22nd ranked player of the last week. The bloke one spot ahead of him is one Buddrick Hield. 25 minutes a game, 17-7 with 2.3 triples and 1.7 steals. And you can look at that and go, I love the fact that he's getting 7.3 rebounds a game. Like, what's going on there? The last 3 games, 7, 8, and 7. On the boards, fantastic. 1.7 steals, love it. 2.3 triples and 17 points, love it. 61% from the field, 64% from threes. A good shooter, not that good. So those numbers are going to regress. But I am encouraged by some of those other numbers. The problem is, in Sacramento, who bloody knows what's going to happen with minutes every night. He played 28 in this one, 21 the game before, and 27 after that. In those 3 games off the bench, he's been much more looks much more comfortable coming off the bench. If you need to add someone off the wire and he's available, I've got no problem with adding Bud in this situation. I don't think he's very good. You're well aware of that, but this is his role as a sixth man guy who plays 25 to 26 minutes, Lou Williams style. Definitely not the same player as Lou, but he can be that guy that comes on and averages, you know, Jamal Crawford, 17, 18 points off the bench, hit a couple of threes. And if you can bring the steals and rebounds, that really gets his value up. But this shooting's not going to continue. He's not going to hit shots at 61%. Not going to hit triples at 64%. It's just not going to happen. He was a perfect 4 of 4 in his threes today, so expect that to drop, and therefore his threes will drop, and his points will also drop as well. But the encouraging part are the other numbers, the rebounds, the steals. That's really encouraging from Buddrick to put up those sort of numbers. So to shout out to him for being the young gun of the night. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Yeah, Marcin Gortat. He's far from hot at the moment. 8 points, 5 rebounds, big zeros in the threes, assists, steals, and blocks column. 4 of 5 from the field. That was good. 0 of 1 from the line. Remember that first game of the season where he had 16 and 17? And I was looking pretty dumb saying, you know what? I don't even know if Marcin Gortat's going to be a standard league player. That was my comment at the start of the season. I thought he was going to be pretty limited. Well, currently he's down to the 94th ranked player. Actually, that's not even true. Sorry. He's the 102nd ranked player this year in 31 minutes a game. Over the last week, he's barely inside the top 130. And with Markieff Morris What's wrong with my voice? With Marquise, Josh, just settle down, get your voice right. With Markieff Morris coming back, and he's going to play some minutes at center, and with the form of Kelly Oubre, I don't think that Gortat's going to be able to play 30 minutes a night. We saw Jason Smith and Yan Mihinmi both play in this game as a reserve, as a backup center. Gortat wasn't in any foul trouble. Morris is going to play at center also. So the 30 minutes he's currently been getting, I just don't think it sticks. And he is still useful to hold onto in a 12-10 league, but he's probably going to end up being your 12th best player, your 13th best player on that roster. And if he goes down to 26 a night and Mihinmi and Smith and Morris are playing minutes at center as well, I wouldn't be shocked whatsoever. He's solid at times. His field goal percentage is really, really impressive this year. But he's only a positive contributor in three categories: rebounds, field goal percentage, and a small positive in blocks. But he's under one per game, which for a center is not really what you need. So he's giving you boards, and he's giving you field goal percentage, and he's giving you a whole bunch of nothing in the other area. So while he is still a hold, his value is not going to return back to top 60 numbers. I don't believe he was a top 60 player for like three seasons in a row before last year. And I just don't think he's going to be getting back to that level of play. Big Marcin Gortat. And often we can become confused or swayed by the first game of the season. Happened a bit with John Simmons last season, and it could happen here with Gortat. He had that big one. Remember that big performance? He was on fire. And then we look at the Jaylen Brown, another one that might happen with him this season. Then we look at what else happened for him over the course of the next 2 weeks, and it sort of gets ignored a bit. But the numbers, they are what they are. He's 130th over the last week, and that's even while he is shooting 64% from the field. So the efficiency is fine. It's just that he just offers very, very little in those other areas. Now it's time for us to have a look at the rest of the games. Have a look at all the games. In fact, there were 10 of them on Tuesday, a weird Tuesday in the NBA with 10 games. So we'll get into that, and then we'll move on and preview Wednesday's 5-game slate. All right, let's look at these games from Tuesday. The first game we look at, the Dallas Mavericks with a weird win on the road against Washington. I say weird because Dallas is shithouse, but they have beaten Washington. I think it's every time bar one out of the last 10 encounters, something stupid like that. Anyway, the pencil Harrison Barnes had a season high 31 points, which included 9 boards, and he was super efficient at 61% from the field. Only the one assist, one steal, one block for Harrison Barnes, but some really good numbers there. And he has stepped it up after a slow start. And Wes Matthews, who'd been really struggling, also had a big game. 14, 8, and 6, a pair of steals and 4 triples in 37 minutes for Wes. I still think he's more of a borderline 10-teamer and a back-end 12-team guy. Numerous people dropped Dennis Smith Jr. Numerous people asked me if they should drop Dennis Smith Jr. And almost without a doubt, it was weird that this happened, but almost without a doubt, it was, I need to drop Dennis Smith. He's shitting me. He's pissing me off. And I don't know why he was just aggravating owners as much as he was. I don't normally get questions like that. Need to drop him. He's pissing me off. He's pissing me off. He's pissing me off. He's a rookie point guard, man. The field goal percentage is going to be rough. He was never going to continue to shoot 45% from the line. That's just not who he is. He's a 70% guy. And we're seeing it now. He looks much better. 22, 8 and 8, a steal and a 3. He has to be owned. Dirk, 19 minutes, 6 and 5. But the big story, the most questions I got in this match was Salah Mejri. 25 minutes for Salah, 10 and 12 with 5 blocks. And that's 2 times out of the last 3 games that Mejri has blocked 5 shots. Is Mejri a must own? Was the question I was getting. I think it's unrealistic to expect him to get 5 blocks per game. It's unrealistic to expect a double-double from him every night. It's probably unrealistic to expect 25 minutes per night. Because we look at a couple of things here. Dirk had 19 minutes with 4 fouls. Dwight Powell played only 2 minutes. Nerlens Noel played 6 minutes. Now, it's realistic to say that Mejri has jumped ahead of Noel in the... Noel, jeez, I'm using the proper pronunciation. It's unrealistic to think that Mejri has jumped ahead of Nerlens Noel in the pecking order. I think that's realistic. But I don't think that we're going to see 2 minutes out of Dwight Powell or 19 minutes out of Dirk every night. So Mejri has some value. He's a real blocks specialist. We've seen this from him multiple times throughout his career, that when he gets this opportunity, the blocks will come and the rebounds will come. It's all about what sort of minutes are we getting. Are we talking 1.1 blocks per game or 1.9 blocks per game? And that's a big difference, because 1.9 blocks a game is rosterable in 12-team leagues. 1.1, probably not. As for Noel, 6 minutes, 2 and 2, I think he's done. I think he's cooked. I don't think there's any way that he has any value on this Dallas Mavericks team this year. Don't care if Dirk rests. Don't care if Dirk gets injured. Dirk would need to go down Dwight Powell would need to go down, and probably Salah Mejri would need to go down before Noel does anything. And you can be pissed as much as you want about the Dallas Mavericks, and there is a little bit of that, but there is absolutely zero doubt in my mind that Noel is a A-grade ship bloke, and that is causing the problems with, it was all those issues with him in Philadelphia, but that is the reason that he is just pouting. He is complaining. He is not doing what he needs to do. He is not listening to the coaching staff. There's arguments with his management and the front office, and that is what's happening. It's not a management-only thing, or we're going to keep him down so we can re-sign him at a cheap price next year. There is zero chance that Nerlens Noel comes back to Dallas. Zero. He will not be back in Dallas next year, I can guarantee you. They are not suppressing his value so they can sign him for cheap. That is not what is happening. It is an internal thing, and I don't have any inside information on this, so this is my speculation. It's me reading things that I'm seeing or reading the situation. It is definitely like, this guy is a real prick and we don't want to deal with it. That's the way it's coming off. And he's just not, they're not gunning for any wins. They don't want him out on the court influencing other people, having that sort of negative attitude out on the court. Now, Noel can be traded if he agrees to it. So he'd have to, he has veto power given that he signed the qualifying offer. He can't be traded until December 15th, I believe, or maybe it's January 15th. It could be January 15th. So he can't be traded until then anyway, and he has veto power. So holding on to Nerlens now, when he might get 15 minutes a night for 2-3 months, I just don't see it. I don't see the point. It would require a few things to happen for him to become valuable. Yogi Ferrell moved back into the starting lineup, 8-2-1, really better options than him out there in 12 teamers. For the Wizards, Johnny Wall returned, 37 minutes for John, 23-3-13, a steal and a block. The free throws, a problem here, just 13 of 18 from the line, lots of attempts, not as many went in, but still a strong night. Otto Porter remains really amazing this year, 13-5, a triple one, 73 true shooting, and just a bizarrely low usage for Otto Porter. 11% usage. It's crazy low. He is ranked, and you'll be surprised. This is 8-cat rankings. He's the 12th ranked player this season on a usage of 17%. That is the lowest usage of anyone inside the top 24, apart from Steve Adams, who is at 15%. Only three blokes are under 20. It is him, it is Andre Drummond, and it is Steve Adams in that top 24. He is averaging 18-7 with 2.5 threes, 2.1 steals, 0.8 blocks on 57% shooting from the field, and 52% from the three. Now, we saw him last year start off the year with a 48% mark from three, and it dropped significantly, and he cooled off a lot. He is 100% cooling off. If you can get a top 20 type player, a consistent top 20 player back for Otto Porter, and use that number 12 ranking to your advantage, I would do it, because those numbers are 100% coming down. He is not going to be this efficient. He will not have a true shooting of 68% as we move forward, and he won't hit 52% from three. So those numbers will come down. He might settle inside the top 30. The top 40 is probably a more realistic expectation, but he won't be able to maintain these numbers. But he's been really impressive regardless. Bradlesbeal, 22-4-2 with a pair of triples, another strong night there, while Markeith wasn't great, 8-3-2 in 27 minutes, and Oubre played 26 minutes and had 9-7. And this is the issue I have, and I said that I didn't believe Morris was a 100% must-own guy. I think he should be owned, but it doesn't have to be on your team. I don't think he's going to really exceed 30 or 31 on most nights, and his production will be quite muted, especially with the way that Oubre has stood up and the play of Smith and Mahinmi and even Mike Scott to a limited extent. The Milwaukee Bucks and the Cleveland Cavaliers, well, really hard to assess the Bucks given that Bledsoe is going to come in and muck everything up. But Yanni was great, 40-9, 4 blocks, 76% from the field, just a casual 76%. He's the third ranked player so far this season behind Boogie and LeBronald James.
LeBron James.
Chrissy Middleton was also massive, 20 points, 7 rebounds, 11 assists and 3 steals, as was Brogdon, 22-5-6 and 4 triples with a block. Brogdon is really, really good, and it's going to be, and it's Jason Kidd, so pretty much whatever the wrong decision is, Kidd will likely make it, and that'll probably mean that he does limit Brogdon or bring him off the bench. And if he starts playing Brogdon 24 minutes a night, then he needs to be fired. He needs to be fired anyway, but he needs to be fired if he limits what Brogdon can do, because Brogdon is really key to what this team does. Tone Snell, real Tone Snell line, a usage of 3% in this game, 8-3-3, 2 steals, a block, and 2 triples in 40 minutes. Now, he is definitely going to lose some playing time. While Mirza Teletovic, the DFS GPP guru, had 16 points in 17 minutes, which included 4 triples. He does nothing else. If the shots don't fall, he gives you nothing. As for the Muppet, John Henson, 18 minutes, 7-3. Those 4 fouls really early limited what he can do, but he was still probably more impactful than McKerr, who had 5-1-1 with a steal and a block in his 15 minutes. Daly had 16 minutes, and that's a precursor of what's going to come for him. Onto the Cavs, it's been an absolute disgrace, and you've heard me talk about this all through the season. It's been a disgrace that both Dwayne Wade and Derrick Rose have been taking more shots than Kevin Love this season. In this one, Love got the second most shots on the team and went bananas. 32-16, 2 steals and a block, 64% from the field. They just need to give Love the ball. There's none of this bullshit with Wade, none of this bullshit with Rose, and that is part of the reason why Rose and Wade are shit players. They shouldn't be using the ball as much as they do. They shouldn't be shooting as much as they do, and it's why Ty Lue is not a great coach, because he shouldn't be allowing this. Now, this is the step forward that they need to turn things around by actually getting their second best player in Kevin Love to be the second best offensive option. Then that's great. But if they revert back to more of this bullshit from Rose and Wade, then I don't know what to tell you. As for Rose, I know what to tell you here. He's bad. 25 minutes, 10 points, 1 rebound, 2 assists. He has more turnovers on the season than assists. I think it's 19 versus 12 for assists versus turnovers, which is just crazy for a starting point guard. I don't care that he's starting. He shouldn't be owned in 12-team leagues. While Dwayne Wade, a second strong game in a row for Wadey, 10-3-3, a steal and 2 blocks. I still wouldn't love him in a 12-teamer. J.R. Smith went off 20 points with 5 triples. That's at least 33 minutes in both of the last 2 games. He's more of a streamer for threes. He offered 1 rebound and 1 steal and no other numbers and really got hot. It's probably his best game in 3 years. Jay Crowder, terrible. 5 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist. No Tristan Thompson, only plays 25 minutes. That ad you may have made, I don't think it's worth it. I don't think there's any need to really hold on to Jay. He is struggling in a significant way at the moment. LeBron was great, as always, 38-9 with 3 steals.
LeBron James.
Sure. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Indiana Pacers. Tone Davis, a monster, 37-14 with a pair of blocks and 4 triples. And Boogie said, well, I can do something similar to that. He had 32-13 with 4 triples, 6 assists, and 2 blocks. These guys are just absolute monsters at the moment. Boog is the number 1 player in fantasy. Tone Davis is number 4. That is the numbers they are putting up. Boog is at 29-14-6. 29-14-6. Davis is at 28-13-3 with over 2 blocks. These are crazy numbers from these guys. The problem is the rest of the team is just shitful. Just a horrible, horrible roster. Jameer Nelson had 10-2-3 with 3 steals. That's 2 consecutive strong games for Jameer, but more of a streaming guy. While Drew Holiday wasn't a good night for him, 10-3-5. Tone Allen getting some extra minutes, same as Darius Miller, but you'd have to be pretty deep to really look at Darius Miller, who had 12 points with 3 triples in his 19 minutes. On to the Indiana Pacers. Domantas Sabonis was out. Miles Turner was unleashed. Now, I did say yesterday, I'm really weary about using centers going up against Boog because they often get in trouble, and Turner had a foul in about the first 5 seconds of the game. But he was a monster. 21-12, a 3 and 3 blocks. Inefficient, but I don't give a shit. Those are great numbers. Your buy low window is probably closing. People were ready. Oh man, I can't. What's wrong with Turner? I have to get rid of him. After those 2 games where he came back and played 24 minutes, it's going to be a timeshare. I can't deal with it. A little bit of patience is required in this game. Like, just calm down. Turner, I think, is a fairly safe lock for a top 30 guy and probably a top 20 player. If you put up 21-12 with 3 blocks against Boog and Tone Davis, I reckon you're going all right. As for Thaddeus Young, 13-6 with 2 steals, continues to be strong, while Bojan Bogdanovic had 14 points in his 23 minutes. Daz Collison was okay. Vic Oladipo, plenty of people asking me, what's wrong with Vic? Why so few minutes? Why only 8 minutes in the first half? Well, he had 2 fouls in about the first 5 minutes, and then Lance Stevenson replaced him and got really hot, so they just ran with Lance. So Depot finished with only 29 minutes. There's literally nothing to be worried about here, apart from the fact that he seems to accumulate fouls at an above-average rate on this team. But he had 15-4-3. Lance had 14-8-2 in 28 minutes. I wouldn't be rushing out to add Lance Stevenson anywhere. The Chicago Bulls and the Toronto Raptors.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
Apart from Salah Mejri questions, Bob Portis questions were everywhere. Bob Portis must own 12 team. Got to add Bob Portis. Do I add him? You look at that box score and you go 21-13 with 3 triples and 4 assists. It's bloody good. I'll grant you that. It is a good line from Bob Portis. Shit bloke, good line. But let's go back over Bob's previous two seasons and how many times did he do this and then would come up and put up a 0-4 or a 6-2? All the time. He played 24 minutes. I don't see him getting that much run every single game. In fact, the Bulls were down by 30 points, so they just ran with him in garbage time, and he got red hot, and they did bring the team right back and only ended up losing by 5. That's not going to be an every night situation. Larry Markkanen won't play 29 minutes a night, but Fred Hoiberg is useless, so maybe he will. I think that Markkanen gets an extra 3 minutes there. I don't think that Robin Lopez plays only 25 minutes a night with Portis back, and there's some of those minutes that Portis was getting instead of Lopez. So while that looks really good, we've seen this from Portis before. He's also just horrendous in terms of defensive numbers, steals and blocks. He's a horrendous defensive player in general. He's not going to be this efficient. He will have some okay games. I do not in any circumstance think he is a must-own 12-team league guy. Not in any circumstance. Lopez, Markkanen are going to be your starting 4 and 5, and they'll both play minimum 29 minutes most nights, and you'll see Markkanen 32 or so. Portis will get some of those minutes there as scraps, and Felizio will get some too. So you might see 20 out of Bob. You might see 12 out of Felizio. But 24 minutes, expecting him to shoot 62% from the field and hit 3 triples on 60%, that's not a realistic expectation from Portis. So it was great that he came out there. It's shit ass that he's able to actually play, given the circumstance that led him to get suspended. Also, the quote that he had before the game was so unaware, so not self-aware from Portis. I hated that my dream got taken away from me. No, it didn't get taken away from you, Bob. You punched a bloke in the mouth. You took it away from yourself. He's acting like the victim. Oh, they took it away from me. They suspended me. What did I do? You punched a bloke in the face. Straightforward. So don't come out here, I can't let my dream be taken away. I'm going to work extra hard. No, it wasn't taken away. You are just a numbnut who did it. Back to the Portis fantasy value, though. It's a great line. There's just a lot of things that have to happen for that to be a consistent thing, and I just don't see it. Chrissy Dunn, 10-6-4 with 4 steals. And shit, he didn't actually hurt your percentages. He played more minutes than Jaren Grant, even though he didn't start, and he is the guy that I would want to own over Grant. I get the feeling, though, given it is Hoiberg, that these minutes are going to fluctuate and they're going to alternate pretty much all the time. So that's going to be somewhat of a concern with his minutes. But you know, I think that the value there in the steals and the assists makes him somewhat worthy of owning. Denzel Valentine was strong again. 14 points, 2 triples, 4 assists, and 2 steals. I like him in a 12-team league. He should be playing more minutes than Paul Zipser, and he did in this one. 21 minutes for Zipser, 27 minutes for Denzel. I think he's going to be in that 25-28-minute range, which is exactly where he should be, if not more. Justin Holiday obliterated your percentages once again with 15-3-4. I just want Valentine to play over him. It's as simple as that. Onto the Raptors, DeMar DeRozan, 24-4-4. And Jonas Valanciunas, he just tears up the Bulls. 6-7 from the field. 21-10, no other numbers, but only 24 minutes. So what is Casey going to do in the next game? He still played an extraordinarily large rotation. Siakam had 12 minutes. Bebe had 10 minutes. Poeltl had 11 minutes. You got a Barker playing 29. And I just don't have faith that 24 minutes a night is what Valanciunas is going to get. Now, I'd still hold him, but he's got a real good record against the Bulls. He played, I think, 9 minutes in the first quarter, killed him, and then played 13 minutes in the remaining 3 quarters. That's a problem. And that's something that is going to be an issue as we move forward with his minutes. Kyle Lowry had 17-6-6, a strong night there for Lowry. While Ibaka, I don't know how Ibaka can put up 16-5 and shoot 64% and still be shit most of the time. He's just a real baffling case. He should still be owned, obviously. But man, he's a weird one. While Norm Powell, strong 2 games. We said we wanted to see exactly what would happen here with Miles back and with Lowry not getting ejected. Well, he played 27 minutes, which is encouraging, but only 8 shots, 7 points, 2 assists and a steal. Really a borderline 12-team league guy. The Charlotte Hornets and the New York Knicks, Dwight E. Howard continues to be really good. In fact, he hit all 3 of his free throws as well. 21-9, a steal and a block. A real steal if you drafted him this year. While Kemba Walker, 21-5-7 with another strong night for him. No Kid Gilchrist, no Nick Batum. So the Baconator, Dwayne Bacon, started. He went scoreless and racked up some quick fouls while Trevion Graham had 7-2-2. But with those two guys limited, we had Michael Carter-Williams play some more minutes. 20 minutes for Carter-Williams, 4-3-3. But the 3 steals is nice. The 3 assists are nice. But finding enough minutes for Carter Williams when everyone is back is a really tough ask, especially considering Malik Monk is playing so much at point guard. As for Monk, he got hot shooting here, 21 points with 5 triples and 3 assists. He's going to be up and down. He can be definitely be streamed in for points and threes and give you assists sometimes. I would rather have Monk than Portis in my 12-team league. I know they're different players, but as a general thing, I would rather have Malik Monk over Bob Portis. The problem, again, with him is where's the path to 30 minutes? Is he getting them over Kemba? No. Is he getting them over Nick Batum? No. Is he getting them over Jeremy Lamb? Probably not. Lamb's been really good and had 15, 5, and 4 here. So how does he get enough minutes to be a useful, consistent 12-team league player? I think that's going to be a hard sell to convince me that he will be able to do that consistently moving forward. On the Knicks.
Percentages.
Yeah, Kristaps is good. And an inordinate amount of questions coming my way. Oh, Josh, I want to sell Porzingis. If I trade Porzingis for, insert two players in the 40s, is that a good move? Why is everyone trying to trade Porzingis? He's killing it at the moment. Look, I just think he's really tall, so he might hurt his knees. He's going to drop off. The Knicks are going to shut him down. Just stuff that you're just speculating on stuff that might happen. It also might not. And you're talking about a complete 50-50 coin flip. 28 and 5 with 4 triples and 3 blocks. He's insane at the moment. He's the 8th ranked player in fantasy. I wouldn't be looking to trade him anywhere. Enes Kanter. When you get 3 steals out of Enes Kanter, it's a good night. 14 and 6 with 3 steals there. Only 25 minutes for Kanter, but he is a must-own player. Well, Doug McDirt is the opposite, but he had a good night. 20 points with 3 triples, and in true McDirt style, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, and the big zeros in the steal and block column. Cock. He just puts up numbers. 12, 5, and 4, a steal and 2 blocks in 18 minutes. Bill Hernan Gomez, you know what to do. He's done. O'Quinn is... Hernan Gomez is owned in 35% of leagues, and Cock is owned in 7. That needs to be rectified. O'Quinn can literally, in 20 minutes a night, be a 12-team league guy. I just don't think he's going to get 20 minutes a night. Timmy Hardaway was not efficient, especially from the line where he went 4 of 8. But 19 and 5 with 3 triples, pretty strong. While Frankie Ntilikina, 26 minutes. Jarrett Jack, 22. More minutes for Frank. Didn't start, but Frank's going to be starting by December. I'm pretty confident. He had 8 assists. The problem with him is you're going to have field goal percentage problems and you're going to have scoring problems, but the assists and generally the steals will be quite valuable for Ntilikina. So, you know, he is going to have some value and you might want to add him in 12s, but I don't think he's got top 100 potential for this season. I could be wrong. I just don't think that's where it's going to be. The LA Clippers and the San Antonio Spurs, a big night from Austin Rivers, who scored 24 points on 17 shots. He had 4 triples, 2 steals, 3 assists. He's a borderline 12er to me. While with the Rooster Danilo Gallinari out with that glute strain, Wes Johnson started. 12 and 6 for Wes. And if you don't remember, go and check up his history. But when he played for the Lakers, he was a really sneaky fantasy asset. He was a guy that averaged a triple one. So that's a steal, a block, and a 3 per game. And look, 12 and 6 with 2 triples, a steal, and a block here is really, really useful. And if Gallinari has to miss more time, which it's Gallinari, so yes, he probably will, then Wes Johnson is worth looking at. Lou Williams also gets a bump with the Rooster sideline, 17, 1, and 3 with a steal and a block, while Blakey Griffin had 15, 9, and 6. It wasn't Pat Bev's best night, 2 of 11 for 6 points, but clearly he'll be better. My boy Sindarius Thornwell, getting those minutes, man. He's getting minutes. 17 minutes for Sindarius, 6, 2, and 1 with 2 steals. He has probably 18-team league value, but it's a rookie under Doc Rivers, so you should consider that a huge win. For the Spurs, some weird stuff coming out about Kawhi Leonard today with Popovich saying that he was behind in his rehab, behind Tony Parker in his rehab, and the rehab has gone much, much slower than they anticipated. Parker was due to return at the start of December, so does that mean that Kawhi is out for another 3 to 4 weeks? That's the concern. The other thing is, then Kawhi's sister posted on Instagram that he's going to be back on the court next week, so which one do we believe? I don't know. The reporting coming out of San Antonio is weird, just in terms of, you know, we're not going to get an exact timetable, but I got into this argument with a couple of people today about the Spurs. I don't really have too much of an issue with what the Spurs did. Now, it would have been nice to know that he hurt his quad whenever he hurt it last season, back in March, April, whenever. We had no idea about this injury. We never heard about it whatsoever. But I've got no problem with the Spurs not coming out in August or September and saying, you know what, Kawhi's dealing with a quad problem. These guys are on holidays. They are not at the facility. The Spurs aren't having any media availabilities or press conferences to send this stuff out. They don't need to send that out. It's the off-season stuff. On about the second day of training camp, Pop said, well, you know, Kawhi's likely going to miss the preseason. We don't have a timetable on it. We think he'll be back. We just need, you know, some extra rehab. And then, yeah, every time he's asked, well, the rehab's just not going how we want it. He's responding really slowly to it. We don't exactly know why, but he's not responding as we would have liked. And to me, that's fairly transparent. What more could you look? He said, we don't know when he'll be back. we expect him, you know, around this time. But look, things just aren't going as we hoped it would. And it's real frustrating. If you drafted Kawhi, it's real shit. You would have loved to have known in August or September, but not often that teams come out and just go, by the way, August, we don't know where Kawhi is. He's not with the team at the moment, but look, just letting you know, he's probably not going to play preseason. He would have come back. They would have done the tests on him and they would have said, shit, you know what? This isn't good. We're going to rest you in preseason. That's how I imagine it would have gone down. So I don't think there's any deception going on. And all the quotes that came out from San Antonio were saying, you know, we're not sure, we think preseason. And then the updates, like, we're just not responding. And that's shit house. What it does do is it extends the sell high window for LaMarcus Aldridge. It extends the value of Dan Green. It extends the value of Kyle Anderson as well. Anderson was okay here. 32 minutes, 8, 4, and 4 with 2 steals. More a deeper league guy. Well, Aldridge got a ton of shots once more. 25 and 6 with 2 blocks and 2 threes. If you can get anyone who's a top 30 player for LaMarcus Aldridge, I would do it. He's not going to be able to maintain this level of usage when Kawhi comes back. Power was good. Real good, in fact. 19, 8, and 6. While Rudy Gay looked awesome. 22, 7, and 3 with 2 steals. But only 24 minutes for Gay. He won't be able to sustain that sort of usage when Kawhi comes back. He's not really a 12-team league must-own. Dan Green, also awesome. 24, 1, and 2. A steal, a block, and 4 triples. But we know we can't rely upon that. The opposite of awesome was the starting point guards, DeJounte Murray and Pat Mills. 2 points for Millsy, 6 points for Murray. Neither of those guys are 12-team leagues. Or 12-team league guys, in fact. The Brooklyn Nets and the Denver Nuggets, no Rondé, no Trevor Booker, no Jarrett Allen. So we had Spencer Dinwiddie start the game. He played 17 minutes only and had 5, 2, and 2. He was not very good in this one. In fact, he did not start the second half. He's fine to own. I don't think he's a must-own guy by any stretch. The minutes were spread all over the place. Not one player played under 10 minutes in this one. We had the lowest minutes actually go to the waiver wire line of the night player, and that was Isaiah Whitehead. Jumpin' Joe Harris had 6 points. D'Angelo had 12, 4, and 6, and a ton of turnovers. The one bright spot was the form of Caris LeVert. You know how I talked about how his shooting was horrendously low, and he was a 46% three-point guy and hit 56% of his twos at Michigan. At some point, it was going to turn around. Well, it started here. 5 of 9 for 56% from the field. 13, 3, and 2. 2 blocks and a 3. I still believe he's a 12-team league guy. That shooting will come around. This is off the back of a 5-steal game in the last one. So some okay numbers for Caris LeVert. Damari Carroll also struggled here in this game. Or the blue swimmer. He's just not a very good player. It's simple as that. He's not a good fantasy player. He's an okay real life player, but he's very limited. The other big thing, I guess, to come out of this from the Nets point of view was Tyler Zeller looking really good. 21 and 5 with a steal and a block. Outplayed Tim Mozgov. He's a better player than Quincy Acey, I believe. So just watch for him in deeper leagues. Now, when Booker, Hollis Jefferson, and Allen come back, I don't know if he'll stick in the rotation. Will he go out? Will Mozgov stick around? Will Acey stay there? Like, who knows how it's going to work? But Zeller put his foot down, and if you're in a deeper league, not a bad idea to take a squiz there and see what you can do, see if you can add him, because he might just stick around with some relevance. On to the Nuggets. Gaz Harris. Only 9 points for Gaz, but 4 rebounds, 5 assists, and 6 steals gave him the value, while Fartin Will Barton was very, very good. 17, 8, and 4, 2 triples, 1 steal, and 2 blocks for Fartin in 31 minutes, and he limited the playing time of both the Blue Arrow and Manny Moutier. Jamal Murray had 25 minutes, only 4 points, did have 4 assists and 2 steals, so having some value, and I still think he is a 12-team league guy, but if you want to drop him, I do understand that. As for Moutier, wasn't a great night, 2, 3, and 2. Old Baby Neck had 10 rebounds, probably his best performance of the season, but you can leave him for the deeper leagues. And good old let's run the offense through him. Paul Millsap had 17 points with a pair of steals and a pair of blocks. A decent night from Millsap, really efficient, but still the free throws are really bothering him this season. And I think a return to the top 40 is probably out of the calculations for Paulie Millsap. The Philadelphia 76ers, no Joel Embiid, but it doesn't matter when you've got Ben Simmons. 16, 13, and 6, 3 steals, 3 blocks, only 32% from the field, but he just took everything on. He had a usage of 33%. He is crushing it. The field goal percentage was shithouse here, but man, he is really, really good. Unbelievably good. With Embiid out, Šarić stepped up. 36 minutes for Dario, 25 and 10 with 5 triples. There was also no Jared Bayless. Now, Šarić had been starting in place of Bayless anyway, but then coming out for the second half and playing like 20 minutes a night. Now, Bayless is ruled out at least for one more game, but they say he's out indefinitely with the wrist thing, which is what kept him out the entirety of last season. So it's something to watch. Is Šarić a guy that you want to go and add? The fact that he went off in a game with Embiid out is a little bit concerning, considering he's just done nothing in any of the other games, and he got quite hot in this game with his shooting. So I wouldn't be rushing to grab Šarić, but in a 14-teamer I would, and I would have a look in at 12. Bob Cove had 14 and 12, or JJ Redick, another strong night, 20 points with 3 triples. Wasn't a great TJ McConnell night with just 7 points, but the 8 assists make up for that, and he should be owned. While Rashawn Holmes, no Joel Embiid, 15 minutes, 6 points, 5 rebounds. This was the game that the Rashawn Holmes truthers were waiting for. No Embiid, he's going to go off. And I thought he'd have a big game too, but he got into foul trouble. Amir Johnson played 22 minutes and Šarić played at center. These are the problems that I think with owning Holmes is even in the games with Embiid's out, there's other options there to play center. One of those options is not Jahlil Okafor, who had 3 fouls in 3 minutes and was absolutely horrific. So any of you guys in a 12-team league stashing Okafor, hoping he gets traded, I had someone say to me, oh, yeah, he's going to get traded. I'll put his stats at, you know, probably 18 and 8 with 2 assists and 1.5 blocks. And it's not happening. Maybe I'm wrong. I just cannot see it happening. He's just not good. And maybe it's the environment. Maybe his confidence is just rooted. But he is just... he's just not good at this point. It's as straightforward as that. On the Jazz, a really disappointing loss for them. Rudy Gobert, 16 and 15, 2 steals and 3 blocks with another good night. And a lot of questions about Ricky Rubio. Ricky Rubio, and people use some really emphatic words. He's been horrible. Has he? He's been atrocious. What's wrong with him? Well, he was a 29th ranked player before this game. And I understand that he's averaging, you know, fewer assists than what you wanted. But horrible? Atrocious? No, not at all. Not anywhere close to those words. Not even close. Now, the minutes haven't been awesome lately, down to about 30. And his shooting was shithouse in this one. He was 4 of 16, 25% for 11 points. But for the people complaining about assists, he had 8 of them. He had 2 steals. So should you be happy? Like, literally before this, 7 days ago, he dropped 30 on the Blazers. So to say that Rubio's been horrible, people overreact in a crazy, crazy way. Like, he has not been horrible. Rocket Rodney Hood played 28 minutes, but he was replaced as the starter after halftime by Don Mitchell. Hood was much better than Mitchell in this game with 19 points, 4 rebounds and 2 triples on 29% shooting. But that 29% shooting looks absolutely brilliant when you consider that Donovan Mitchell had 3 of 21 for 14% and had 8 and 3. Now, Mitchell's really aggressive in what he's doing. 31 minutes here for Don, and I would own Mitchell. I'd possibly own him over Rocket. But there's going to be shit nights of this. And if you complain about Tim Hardaway's field goal percentage, then you don't want anything to do with Don Mitchell's field goal percentage, because he's going to be high volume and it's going to be shit like this for the majority of the season. There'll be some good nights, but it will be horrendous. But he can be owned definitely in 12-team leagues. A guy who probably shouldn't be is Derek Favors. Just can't get anything happening. 20 minutes here, 5 and 2. There's just no... There's just no spark from him. He just can't get anything happening, and I don't really feel like it's going to come back. Jingle and Joe had 15 and 6 with 3 triples, and he, of course, is a must-own guy, but apparently 29% of leagues on Yahoo don't realize that fact. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Sacramento Kings, I don't know what to say. The Thunder lose. They lose emphatically to the Kings, 94-86. Steve Adams had a disappointing game in the last one, but he bounced back with 14 and 6 with 5 steals and a block. Westbrook had 20 and 12, and probably most importantly, actually hit 4 of his 5 free throws. That will correct at some point. He brings it up, or he mentions the fact that he had to change his routine. Like, he'd shoot his first free throw, then he'd walk out past the 3-point line and come back in. But with the new delay of game rules, and if you walk out past the 3-point line, it's a tech against you. So he can't do that anymore. He reckons that stuffed up his routine. So we'll see if that changes around now. Paulie George was disappointing, and Mello had 16, 7, and 2. Jeremy Grant continues to get more minutes than Patrick Patterson, 10 and 6. No defensive numbers, but the minutes are enticing, and he has that stream ability. While Andre Robertson, some nice defensive numbers, and he's gone back from low 20s in minutes to high 20s in minutes. He had 2 steals and a block in 29 minutes here, so that can have some really specific value. I almost don't feel like talking about the Kings most nights because it's just so hard to work out what's going on with them. Huge win, so congratulations as a Kings fan. But in terms of determining what the minutes are going to be like, I've got no idea. I know what it should be, but I don't know what it's going to be. Zach Randolph played 26 minutes and had 18 and 8 with 2 steals. That's some nice numbers from Z-Bo. I'd look at him as a 14-teamer, while Scal played 11 minutes, 2 and 3 for LeBissiere. Everyone's going, I've got to hold on to Scal because they're going to unleash him at some point. I just don't believe that will necessarily happen. So I don't, look, it might be, it might happen in March, but what's Scal's upside? Top 80? Is it really worth holding on to someone for that long? And George Hill, I think he's gone. 1-5-3 in 24 minutes for Hill. I don't really see how holding on to him is going to work out at this point. De'Aaron Fox had 10-2-8, while Willie Cauley-Stein, 7-5 with a pair of blocks, but 21 minutes. Just consistent confusion. Importantly, 15 minutes were given to Vince Carter, though, so that's always important to see that while Bogdanovic had 7-4 in 21. Great night from Justin Jackson, though, if I want to go positive for the Kings. 16 points in 30 minutes from Justin. Talking about a completely different thing. Ignore what I was going to say. The Kings starters, I don't think, scored a single point in the first quarter, and they somehow won, which is just absolutely craziness. I wouldn't be looking to add Justin Jackson anywhere. While Garrett Temple led this team in minutes, because why wouldn't Garrett Temple lead a team in minutes? The last game of the night, the Memphis Grizzlies get the big victory over the Portland Trail Blazers. Again, a player. What's wrong with Mike Conley? Nothing. He's all right. 20 points, 6 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, 2 triples, 31 minutes. Yes, the Achilles is a bit of a bother, but he's fine. Tyreke Evans is more than fine. He's crushing it. 21-2-5, 3 steals and a block. And yes, Ben McLemore and Wayne Seldon have to come back, but I don't give a shit. They're not cutting into Evans. Or if they do, then Fizdale's not coaching properly, because Evans is this team's third best player, and it's not even remotely close. So he needs these minutes off the bench. He needs to run things as he's doing. He is killing it, and he has to be owned literally everywhere. Marc Gasol, 16-5-4 with 4 blocks. Dylan Brooks, a shit ton of minutes. 38 minutes for Brooksy, 7-8, but the 3 steals and 2 blocks is what really gets you interested. He's a guy that I don't know how that's going to happen. Now, I get the feeling that Seldon might not actually get back into the rotation as much as they like him. Given the way Brooks is playing, I'm not sure Seldon plays. McLemore, I think, will, and that will have to cut into some of Brooks' minutes. It will also cut into some of Jim Ennis' playing time, perhaps Mario Chalmers. The other thing that's going to cut into Ennis' time is the fact that Chandler Parsons quietly played 23 minutes. Now, he wasn't good in those minutes, but he's looked much better this season, and the minutes are constantly ramping up. And I wouldn't be shocked if, when we get to February, Chandler Parsons is playing 30 minutes a night and putting up top 75 numbers. I don't think it'll happen. I'm not saying you go and add him, but I wouldn't be shocked if that happened. The Blazers, Dame Lillard, oh geez, that's yuck, 12-5-6 on 16 shots. The field goal percentage was bad, while CJ McCollum was brilliant, 36 points on 54% shooting with 3 steals. Noah Vonleh, 22 minutes in a start, 10 boards, one of the more elite rebound streamers that are out there. He's going to give you nothing else, but I think he probably sticks as the starter even when Al-Farouq Aminu comes back, and that's going to make it hard to consider Aminu a 12-team league guy. Speaking of not a 12-team league guy, shout out to Mo Harkless. While Evan Turner had 16-2-3, a decent night for him, but he's probably more of a 14-team league guy at this point in the season. That does it for all of the games from Tuesday. What we're going to do now is we're going to transition. We're going to start talking about DFS for whatever day it is. What day are we talking DFS? Tuesday. Oh, my days are all mixed up here. For Wednesday for DFS, where there are 5 games on. I've got another band that submitted some music to me. This one is called Of Good Nature. So I'm going to play their song, which is called... What's it called? I can't even read that. It's called Sit Around by Of Good Nature. And then we're going to be back and we're going to talk DFS for Wednesday's 5 games. right. So that was Sit Around by Of Good Nature. Thank you for those guys for sending in the song for the podcast. We're going to talk DFS for Wednesday now, but we'll start by looking at the perfect DFS lineups from Tuesday's action. On FanDuel, Malcolm Brogdon, 38. Dennis Smith Jr., 44.6. Chrissy Middleton, 51.9. CJ McCollum, 47.9. The Pencil, Harrison Barnes, 46.3. Dylan Brooks, Brooksy at 33.1. Tone Davis, 66.8. Bob Portis at 40.6. And Nikola Jokic at 73.9 for a total of 443.1. And that cost $60,000. On DraftKings, McCollum, 47.5. Dennis Smith at 45.5. The Pencil, Harrison Barnes, 47.25. Kevin Love, 63. Jokic, 74.5. Chrissy Middleton, 52.75. Bob Portis, 45.25, and Salah Mejri at 36.5 for a total of 412.25, and that cost $49,500. There are five games on Wednesday. As I said, let's get stuck into those. There are two teams that are on back-to-backs, and one of those is in this first game we're going to talk about, and that is Indiana Pacers and the Detroit Pistons. Stan Johnson is questionable with a hip problem, so if he is out, it does open up some interesting situations for Detroit with more minutes going to guys like Reggie Bullock. He'll probably get the most of those minutes and would likely start and could be an interesting DFS option considering he is a minimum salary play. And he had some okay moments last season, so he is a name to watch in that type of situation. At point guard, Ish Smith is at 3,900. We might see some more combined backcourts with Avery Bradley playing at the three with Smith and Jackson alongside each other. So 3,900 from Ish, if Stan is out, is worth having a peek at. While Reggie Jackson at 6,700. I wouldn't normally look at him at that price, but with only the five games on and a pretty decent matchup for Jackson, I think that's a nice spot to have a look at. Daz Collison's at 6,000. The numbers haven't quite been there for Daz lately. Probably a fade here. While Corey Joseph, the upside's pretty limited. I like Avery Bradley, but not enough to look at him in cash. He's at 6,300. It just feels a little bit too high for battles. The matchup is okay going up against Indiana, and I would be really keen in a tournament, but I'm just not totally there for cash. While Victor Oladipo should bounce back at 7,300. I'm all about using Vic in this one, even though Bradley will be guarding him. At small forward, Stan Johnson's at 4,700. I've got no interest, even if he does play. Bojan Bogdanovic is the same price, 4,700, and he is a GPP guy. While Reggie Bullock, as I said, if Stan is out, is worth peeking at. 6,900 for Toby Harris. Probably a little bit too high for Tobe, to be honest. He's got that ability to get there, so in a tournament, but I'm just not totally feeling the reliability there for cash. Well, 6,400 for Thaddeus Young. Probably 3,400 too expensive, but I wouldn't hate using him. I think his consistency is pretty good, especially if Domantas Sabonis is out of this one. Now, Sabonis, if he is out, he's listed as a power forward as well. He's at 5,700. I don't really love that with Miles Turner's minutes back up there. If he is out, then you can look at guys like TJ Leaf getting a little bit of extra time, but not enough to really tickle the DFS fancy. At center, Miles Turner, love this, 7,500 for Miles. And Andre Drummond, also pretty interested at 9,400. Drummo's coming off a 54-pointer in his last outing, and I think this is a decent matchup for him to take a pretty big chunk of numbers away from Miles Turner. If we look at this over on DraftKings, I don't think there's many tournament-only guys. There's a lot of guys that are valuable and more so valuable on DraftKings. Miles Turner, Avery Bradley, Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond, Thaddeus Young, and Victor Oladipo. They're all useful for tournaments and for cash games, I believe, over on DraftKings. Let's move now on to the next game. It is the New York Knicks and the Orlando Magic. So the Knicks also on that back-to-back. The Magic are favored by 5, and the total is 214 points. The injury we need to pay attention to is Lord Alfred Payton, who has been out with that hamstring problem. If he is out, then I'd imagine that John Simmons will get another start. Sheldon Mack gets a bit of a boost in minutes, but not enough to make me totally love all of those guys. At point guard, Payton is at 7,400. Don't think you really want to go there at that sort of a price coming back from a hamstring injury. For the Knicks, it's Frankie Ntilikina and Jarrett Jack, both 4,400. I'd throw Ntilikina into a tournament at that price, but definitely not feeling it in cash. While Mack at 3,600, if Payton is out, I think 3,600 for Sheldon Mack, he can get you 20 points. I think there is some use there to get some of these other high-priced guys in. Courtney Lee, a shooting guard, 4,500. I think there's zero upside in Courtney Lee, but I actually think he's not a bad cash play. While Terry Ross is the opposite, he's a horrendous cash play, but he is a decent tournament option. Timmy Hardaway at 6,000. His lowest score in his last five games was today, and it was 27 points. So that's a fairly decent floor for cash. I think for Tim, he'd be all right at $6,000 there. Small forward John Simmons at 4,800, some upside, but only averaging 15 points over the last three. People always make it, man, John Simmons is a beast. He's a beast. He's not really. 15-point average over the last three games. Like he's just not that. He's not as good as people make out him to be. And his story's fantastic. I think he's an exciting player to watch. I just don't think he's as good as what some people do make out that he is. Evan Fournier at 6,100. He was horrendous in the last game, and that's caused his salary to drop significantly. I'm okay getting back on the Fournier bandwagon here and hoping for another 30-pointer out of him. Dougie McDirt had a big game, but it resulted in just 24 points because he does nothing apart from score. At power forward, John Isaac, 3,500. He had 21 points in the last game, and somehow, John Isaac is averaging 18 points per game over his last five. And at 3,500, that's actually enough for cash. And he just puts up numbers. Now, probably wouldn't want to use him. I think there's still an element of risk, but man, he is going to be good. The two big guns here at power forward, Az Gordon at 7,800 and Kristaps at 9,800, totally fine using either of those guys. They're probably a little bit overpriced, but on FanDuel, pretty much every player is overpriced for Wednesday's slate. So you should be having an expectation of 4.7x rather than 5 or 5.1. I think it's a lower score day, and I think you'll get, you know, the perfect lineup might be 350 or 340 instead of, you know, 460. I think you'll see significant drops given how the pricing stretches out. At center, Nikola Vucevic, 8,200. Yep, I really like him on this sort of a slate. Well, Cock at 4,100. He had 32 in 18 minutes today. That is just what he can do. A decent tournament player. Well, Enes Kanter at 6,800. I think Kanter at 6,800 is not a bad cash play in this matchup against Vooch. Bismack Biyombo is the opposite of good, which is bad. Let's look over on DraftKings. We'll talk about tournament guys. Peyton, Kanter, and Ntilikina are tournament players on DraftKings. For cash, I like Courtney Lee, Az Gordon, Porzingis, and Nikola Vucevic over there. And Timmy Hardaway at 61 is probably a little bit too highly priced over on DraftKings in comparison to his price on FanDuel. The Los Angeles Lakers taking on the Boston Celtics. The Celtics are favored by 9. The total is 209 points. No real injuries to worry about. And Marcus Morris will be back after resting in the last game. At point guard, Kyrie's at 8,900. I think Kyrie is he's almost a lock here for 40, and I think 50 is definitely in his sights. Lonzo's at 6,700. The salary keeps coming down. The production is not even matching that. That's no interest to me for Lonzo Ball. At shooting guard, Marcus Smart at 5,900 is not bad, but it's probably just a little bit too highly priced. While Terry Rozier at 3,700, the minutes just bother me. Only averaging 23 over his last three, 16 points per game there, not really of much interest. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 4,700, your great GPP option there, definitely a chance to go for 30 points. Jordy Clarkson at 4,100, I think Jordy Clarkson at 4,100 is a pretty strong cash play, to be honest. At small forward, Jaylen Brown's at 5,500. That price has come down to an acceptable level now, so I think that he is okay in cash. I don't think he's a great play, but he's fine. While Brandon Ingram at 6,000, I feel pretty good about Ingram getting to 30 points, to be honest. At power forward, Marcus Morris at 4,100. Don't like Marcus Morris. Ship bloke, average basketball player, but at 4,100, I feel really confident in his ability to get to that value. Give him 22 points, I think that's easy that he gets there. Yeah, I like him at that salary quite a bit, and that's not easy for me to say. Jason Tatum, 5,700. I'm in on that as well at that price. Well, Julius Randle at 45. The numbers have been fine. The minutes aren't, so I'll look at him as a tournament type guy. While Kyle Kuzma is now up to 6,300, and that probably prices him out to me. Al Horford at 73, in. Brook Lopez at 6,900, also in. Even though it is a significant price rise for Lopez, his numbers have been fantastic. I would look at Horford over Lopez, but I think both of those guys have some value in this matchup. While Bainesy will move back to the bench, and he's at 3,500. Probably don't want to go down that route with Marcus Morris returning to action. On DraftKings, tournament guys, KCP and Marcus Smart. And I think there's a ton of cash options. Marcus Morris, Brook Lopez. I like both of those guys a lot on DraftKings. Horford, Irving, Kuzma, and Ingram, all cash options over on DraftKings. Let's have a look at the next game. It is, if my thing would work, it is the Miami Heat and the Phoenix Suns. Dion Waiters will be back after missing the last two games due to the birth of his daughter, so he'll be fine. The Heat are favored by 5.5. The total is 213. Yes, Greg Monroe has joined this team, but he won't be playing as he's still injured with that calf strain. Bledsoe wasn't playing anyway, so literally nothing changes for this Suns lineup in this game. At point guard, Mike James, Tyler Ulis, flip a coin. 5,300 for James, 3,900 for Ulis. That would definitely make me lean towards Ulis, but James's production has been significantly better, averaging 29 points over his last five. So if you've got the cash, you clearly take James. If you need to scrounge for the money, then Ulis is the guy, but I'd only look at either of them in tournaments. The Iron Shoulder, Goran Dragic, 7,100. Against his former team, he does have a good record against Phoenix, and that's mainly because they're shit rather than a revenge game scenario. So I think that Dragic is in a really, really strong spot here, while Tyler Johnson at 4,300 with Wade is back, I'll have to pass on that. At shooting guard, Devin Booker, 7,200. That is a $1,000 price drop for Booker. His numbers haven't been awesome lately, but at 7,200, I'm in on that. The problem is the matchup is not an easy one. Joshie Richardson can really cause defensive problems. You saw what Richardson did to Steph Curry against the Warriors. He is a maniac defensively, and that's a problem with Booker. So I'd lean a little bit more towards tournaments for him, whereas Deion Waiters at 6,000, it's just too expensive for me. With Waiters returning, the Duke, Wayne Ellington at 3,100, really hard to see him getting enough minutes to return that sort of value, but foul trouble, injury, he could really pop off and drop a 25 because he can hit threes and we've seen him do it multiple times. Love TJ Warren here at 6,300, a 40-point outing is definitely in play, so I like him. Or Joshie Richardson at 4,700 is clearly just a tournament-type guy, and I'd be avoiding Joshie Jackson or Justice Winslow. At power forward, we're talking about Marquise Chris at 3,800, and that's just so appealing, that price, but man, he's terrible. You cannot use him in cash. He can't even live up to that on a consistent basis, but he could easily drop a 30. Easily drop a 30. The problem is that the defense matchup here is not ideal, but still, he has to be in your GPP player pool. Somehow, after his last game against the Warriors, James Johnson scored 51 points and he had his salary drop by $200. Now, 51 points is probably a little bit too high of an expectation, but at 6,200, I feel right about Jim. He's been putting up crazy, crazy numbers. The minutes have been fine. He's limiting Kelly Olynyk. Yeah, I'm fine with Jim. He definitely is our martyr, so you can have a look at him. Kelly Olynyk, Dragan Bender, Jared Dudds, and Okaro White. Really, really little to see there. At center, Len and Chandler. 47 for Len, 46 for Chandler. I'd be way more happier getting that on Len, but I still don't think I'd want to rely upon that for cash at all. Or Hassan Whiteside at $9,000. I wouldn't be too concerned about the 11 points he had in the game before that. Real opportunity for him to put up some big ones here. So I am in on Hassan Whiteside, and I think his ownership might be pretty low based on the absolute shitburger that he laid against the Golden State Warriors. Over on DraftKings, tournament guys, I think Waiters is in play at 5,700. Mike James, Joshie Rich, and Alex Len. And for cash, it's Whiteside, Warren, Ulis, the Iron Shoulder, and Jimmy Johnson. That's for DraftKings cash and tournament plays. Let's look at the last game of the night. It's the Minnesota Timberwolves against the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are favored by 11. The total for this one is a whopping 229 points. David West rested the last game, so he should be back in action. At point guard, you've got Steph at 9,500. He was terrible in terms of shooting. Still had 33 points in the last one, so I'm okay with using Steph at that sort of a price. While Jeff Teague at 6,900.
My name is Jeff.
Hasn't had a great record against the Warriors in the past, but I'm okay using Teague at 6,900, given the way this slate shakes out. Not the best play, but there is something there with him. At shooting guard, Clay's at 69. That is a tournament-only sort of a guy. Well, we go the same at 6,300. Jamal Crawford, Pat McCaw, no interest in them for me. Kevin Durant at 10,400, love that for cash. I think he's really, really solid with a decent upside. And Iggy at 4,100, I'll be passing. Jim Butler at 7,700. Butler's had a really good record against the Warriors. I think it's a brilliant GPP play. I'm not ready to trust him in cash, but I think this could be a really good, I think it's a 40-plusser for Jim, a real opportunity for that, but I'm not ready to trust him for cash games. At power forward, Gorgui Dieng, look at his numbers, man. 24-point average over the last three, but that's been games that Karl-Anthony Towns has been getting into foul trouble. But we've seen centers against the Warriors get into real trouble. So Dieng in a tournament at 3,200 with 25-point upside, that is definitely a tournament play on the occasion that Towns doesn't play. Now, you're not going to want to pair Dieng and Towns together because it's just counterproductive. You want to put Dieng in a lineup where Towns doesn't play. Taj Gibson's at 46. I don't really see much upside there in Towns. Well, Draymond's at 8,200, and that feels just a little bit too high. Jordy Bell, Dave West, also power forwards and guys you shouldn't really care about. At center, Townsie's at 9,700. I really don't like that against the Warriors for him. While JaVale at 3,000. Yeah, I don't even really know why I mentioned JaVale McGee. If we look over on DraftKings tournaments, Townsie, Butler, and Wigo, whereas cash, we're looking at Teague, Durant, Draymond, and Steph over on DraftKings. All right, let's have a look now at a couple of the other sites. We'll go straight to Yahoo and talk about some GPP guys, Mike James, Terry Ross, Nil Aquina, Tyler Ulis, Boyan, Gorgie Jeng, John Simmons is a tournament guy to have a look at as well over on Yahoo. And if we look at cash plays, Chandler and Len at their prices, $10 and $11 respectively, you can use either of those. Courtney Lee, Kyle Kuzma, Reggie Jackson, Toby Harris, Miles Turner, Vooch, Drummond, Draymond, and Whiteside are some decent cash plays on Yahoo. On Moneyball, look at the tournament guys. Len, O'Quinn, Jeng. I think they've got some tournament upside there, and the guys you can use in both were Brooke Lopez, Vooch, Marcus Morris, TJ Warren, Avery Bradley, the Birdcage, Al Horford, Kuzma, Whiteside, Reggie Jackson, Drummond, Iron Shoulder, Thad Young, Durant, and Porzingis. On Draft Stars, tournament options is quite a few here. Jarrett, Jack, Mike, James, Tyson Chandler, Tyler Ulis, Nil Aquina, Terry Ross, Boyan, Bogdanovich as some decent tournament plays. And then the guys who are useful for both are TJ Warren, Kuzma, Bradley, Drummond, Simmons, Vucevic, Whiteside, Reggie Jackson, Durant, Curry, Dragic, Teague, Miles, Turner. When I say these guys are cash guys, they can be, and you should, if you, when you're putting in a cash lineup, you should always throw that cash lineup into a tournament. There's nothing worse than seeing your big cash line go off and go, oh, if it was in the tournament, I would have won $50,000. Just always throw your cash lineup into a tournament. Don't do the opposite for your tournaments into cashes, but your cash lineup, just always throw it into the tournament and see what happens. If it, because you never want to sit there and go, if I would have won this tournament, I would have got 100 grand, I would have got 5 grand, I would have got $400, whatever it is. You never want to feel that. So that is always put that cash lineup into your tournaments. All right. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, or Spotify. And if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, leave a review. And on YouTube, subscribe, give it a thumbs up, and leave a comment if you do want to have a comment on this. As long as it's not about my nickname, the Duke, I'm happy to hear all comments on YouTube. Happy to hear all comments. I'm just poking shit at that guy. So, you can comment about my use of the Duke nickname as well. Don't forget to check out Draft and use that promo code ALOFANTASY to find the Locked On specific leagues on there and get your free contest entry today. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Michael Malone.